Bonjour tout le monde! Welcome to the second episode of our love series on Presque Parisienne. Joyeuse Saint-Valentin! I'm your co-host Dilara.
Hi everyone, it's Kelly. Happy Valentine's Day! Today we are continuing recording at Les Blouses Blanches, and that is on Rue du Faubourg Saint-Antoine. Such a cute little place. I love it here.
So, in our previous episode, we looked into the stereotypes of love and sex relationships in France, which was super fun to do, honestly. Yeah. However, we spared the big topic, especially for today. What is a better topic to talk about on Valentine's Day than Paris being the city of love? Why is Paris seen as the city of love? Why are the French, and even the French language, perceived as romantic? Is the French accent really that sexy? What is myth and what is reality? We did all the research, we'll be quoting tons of articles. We won't mention all the resources as we go, so just check the show notes for those. So now all you have to do is sit back and listen. Maybe with a glass of wine and some candlelight. I'm getting cheesy now, sorry. Kelly, do you think you can add some sexy romantic music for transition here when you're editing?
No, not at all. No, I will not put romantic music here. Maybe, would you fancy a little bit of accordion music, maybe? A little bit of La Vie en Rose?
Oh, honestly.
Shall we make it as cliched as we possibly can?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, okay. I'll give it a go.
Yeah, I'll stop being your co-host if you do that. Straight up. So, okay, let's get into this. Kelly, why is Paris seen as the city of love?
Wow, that's a big question. Why is Paris seen as a city of love? Well, there's loads of different theories, but I want to go back a while to the 18th century. I think we come back there to the rise of Romanticism in France in the 18th century as a reaction against the rules and logic of neoclassicism.
Yeah.
Romantic artists and writers believed the concept that people were not just rational beings, but were moved and inspired by instinct and emotion. Romanticism began to flourish in France in the decades which followed the French Revolution, after Napoleon's final defeat at Waterloo. Initially associated with literature and music, it was part of a response to like the whole rational, or the rationality of the Enlightenment and the transformation of everyday life that was caused by the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
Like most forms of like romantic art, 19th century French Romanticism, you can't really easily define it.
Yeah.
Artists explored really diverse subjects and worked in various styles, and there is no one single form of French Romanticism. Even when Charles Baudelaire wrote about French Romanticism, this was in the middle of the 19th century, even he couldn't define it. So in 1846 he wrote that Romanticism lies neither in the subjects that an artist chooses, nor in his exact copying of truth, but in the way that he feels. Romanticism and modern art are one and the same thing. In other words, intimacy, spirituality, colour, yearning for the infinite, expressed by all the means that art possesses.
Oh, okay.
Even today, it's really difficult to define because it is so diverse and there's examples of it all over Paris. Romantic architecture was eclectic, borrowed from earlier periods. The Gothic architecture style, exotic styles, they all come from literature, from imagination, all of these sort of things. So this takes me up to Paris today, and she is simply beautiful. Like the Haussmann architecture, the grand Gothic churches, the narrow streets of Montmartre and the Latin Quarter, the parks to go and have a romantic stroll or along the Seine with her bridges, you know, hand in hand with your beau. The museums where you can wander around and get lost in the spaces that are just filled with works of Romanticism movement that I actually just talked about there. Of course, obviously, there's the Eiffel Tower, which to the whole world is a symbol of love. People go there, they flock from all over the world to propose to someone or just to take a romantic photo together. It's also really common for couples to go to the Pont des Arts and stick a padlock on the, well, it was like to stick a padlock on the bridge. You can still spot some of them around the city if you're looking for them. But, you know, this padlock was to symbolise their commitment to each other. Or whatever, but all of these padlocks started to affect the structural integrity of that particular bridge, and so they were all removed and taken away. when you put a padlock onto the bridge, it was tradition to throw your key into the river, which is also a terrible ecological hazard to like everything. I personally found this practice really dumb. I hated it. And the fact that there were so many padlocks made, for me, none of those couples particularly special. And I'm actually really glad they removed them all.
Yeah, and did you know that actually this tradition started in Hungary?
Oh, really?
And
oh,
then no, I didn't know it that. Was adapted in Paris as of 2008.
Right.
And as you said, they banned it in 2015, right. Although some people still continue doing it in other bridges. Mm. I simply find it super wasteful, honestly. Plus, like, putting a lock on someone, like, it reminds me of that. It's like putting handcuffing someone. Like, yeah. I don't like it. I don't think it's romantic.
Yeah, I don't think it's romantic either. So I'm glad we're on the same page with that one. I really don't like it. One of my other favourite things about the city is the golden hour. You know, it's when the summer sun or even the winter sun gets really low and it just bathes this city in a really warm, lovely yellow glow. It is so beautiful. There is actually a timetable available online where you can find the time for the golden hours, weather dependent.
Oh, yeah, so for nice selfies?
Exactly. It'll tell you where to be and what time and you can get some nice photos. But it's very beautiful.
Yeah, I love Paris in the golden hour as well. But all these theories that you mentioned, Kelly, do indeed build up to the image of Paris as being the capital of romance. Although when we were researching for this episode, remember, we came to a point saying that, yes, all of this makes sense, but why Paris in particular? There are so many other cities that can actually like take this reputation. There has to be some kind of like marketing branding behind this, right? Like we said that. And from there on, I went down a rabbit hole and finally found out this is indeed the case. But before going into this, I would like to highlight that there is still a reality in this. It has nothing to do with marketing or branding, but simply a historical foundation. So as you mentioned, the Romanticism movement seems like the foundation of this romance touch in France. And you also talked about the architecture, and we keep going back to Haussmann again and again. But him rebuilding Paris gave the city a completely different look. His works were done in 1870, and that's when La Belle Époque started and lasted up until World War I. During La Belle Époque, Paris established itself as the cultural capital of Europe. We all know about the 1920s, when especially Anglo-Saxon artists and authors came to the city of artistic melting pot. Architecture, intellectualism, art, literature, all these are the building blocks of Romanticism of Paris, making this city our little muse box, right? So Paris managed to keep up this reputation and even build upon it strongly during and after World War I. However, World War II was a completely different story. After the end of the war, Paris not only lost the spotlight, but it also suffered from the post-impact of war until the late 40s. So we're talking about like rationing food, even bread here. So this is where French fashion came in to save the image of Paris, as well as a little bit of the economy, to lure in wealthy American buyers. So in 1947, Christian Dior, by creating the new look, launched the French haute couture renaissance. As controversial as it was, since it was pretty much inaccessible to the majority of the population, like people are looking to get bread, not Dior clothes. It was still praised by the rich, the celebrities, and the wealthy crowd in the US. Dior even made a trade agreement for premium exclusive access in department stores in the US. So with the help of the French government, brands like Dior, Yves Saint Laurent, or Hermès cultivated this elegant, well-cut, custom-made fashion style as the Parisian style. Then came the Nouvelle Vague movement in the French cinema, but let's discuss this a little bit later. If we fast forward to the late 50s, that's when we see General de Gaulle as the Prime Minister and then as the first President of the Fifth Republic. He worked heavily on rebuilding the image of France, not just internationally, but nationally as well. I mean, he started the Fifth Republic, right, which we're still in. So he's also known to be a big supporter of advertisement. And as academic Emile Chabal explains, Charles de Gaulle also contributed to the rebranding of Paris through advertisements of luxury brands, portraying Paris as this chic, elegant, romantic, sexy city, since these brands were subsidized by the government.
Wow, right, okay.
So, in a nutshell, there is this foundation of the Romanticism movement, then La Belle Époque, Paris being the European artistic capital, the muse of artists and all. All these artists fell in love with Paris. Love was immersed into the pavements of the city, but this image was destroyed during the World Wars.
Right.
Then Paris got back up on its feet as of the 50s with haute couture fashion rebranding itself as the fashion, luxury and romance capital of Europe through advertisement, as well as cinema and intellectual world. So I was mind blown finding this out, honestly. So no wonder some people get disappointed when they come to Paris having that expectations versus reality moment, right?
Yeah. So yes, there is a known condition which is very, very well documented called Paris Syndrome. Have you heard of this?
I don't know what it is.
So Paris Syndrome is a documented condition which affects tourists that come to the City of Lights. It's mainly been studied amongst Asian tourists, particularly young girls.
Ah.
And it's basically they come here with this expectation of the city of they have seen marketed in these advertisements and everything we have romanticised about Paris. And the reality is actually very much different. So this city, I'm sorry, is like dirty and noisy and smelly, and I'm sorry, sometimes it's like full of weirdos. And it makes these tourists disappointed to the point of depression.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, so that's what's happening to the Asian tourists.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen to the American ones will be Emily in Paris syndrome.
Yes, absolutely. I think so. Like, if a city like Paris is going to market itself and also charge prices for having people to come here and stay here, what I mean by that is if you're visiting Paris now, Valentine's Day, then you've probably paid like 3 times as much for a hotel room, for example, because
exactly.
It would have been marketed as a Valentine's Day package specifically to come to Paris. And if you've paid for that and you come here with this expectation, then you see the reality, then yeah, you're probably about to be like either depressed or a bit pissed off that you paid that much.
Definitely. So I guess I can say I didn't fully feel the Paris syndrome when I first came here for a few months because my expectations of the city in terms of architecture and culture were met right up. I think the reality of Paris really hit me when I actually tried to build a life here. So
yeah.
That's a whole other different story.
Uh-huh.
What is being advertised as Paris through arts though is another story. I think when we look into pop culture, movies and TV shows have perpetuated the idea that Paris is for lovers.
Yeah.
You come to Paris, you fall in love with Paris, then you fall in love with someone in Paris.
Yes.
One of the earliest examples of this is the 1942 film Casablanca. Two foreigners who fell in love in Paris and then World War II tears them apart. Even us, you and I, Kelly, at some point we thought about having the line, we'll always have Paris in our generic for our podcast.
Yeah.
One article I found calls this Parisian lover fantasy.
Casablanca is one of my favourite movies, and yeah, it's I saw it very late on. It is the ultimate Paris romance. It's just it's just such an incredibly well-made movie. But there are so many other movies that conjure up this eternal romance that actually just make this city painfully photogenic when in fact it's usually not the case. So they clean the city up or it's like really nice angles or like you know they sweep the streets or something, you know, or they clean off the graffiti from the walls just to make it look absolutely beautiful. So the romantic images like in like Before Sunset or Amelie and American in Paris, those are a few of the movies that I've seen that when you look at them you think, wow, actually that city is beautiful.
Yeah, and also in these movies there's always the idea of Paris, just what you're saying, associated with the idea of love.
Yeah.
Like we'll always have this romantic fantasy land, right? And I think this romanticization of Paris in the world of cinema was really reinforced, as I mentioned earlier, during the Nouvelle Vague movement. I also mentioned this in our pilot episode. This cinema movement is one of the main reasons why I came to Paris, why I fell in love with Paris. And I honestly cannot wait us to do an episode on this. But in these movies, we watched mainly young Parisians living a carefree life. Mm-hmm. We've observed their day-to-day lives within the casual, simple chicness of it. And since the cinema movement changed the entire way of filmmaking in Hollywood, I'm not surprised about the American fascination and romanticization of Paris. And given that American culture dominated pop culture for such a long time through entertainment, I believe, maybe this is a high reach, but the Nouvelle Vague movement had a huge impact of Paris becoming the capital of romance. And I also would like to add another angle, which is the existentialism movement that blossomed in France in the mid-1940s, right after the World War II. The movement overall rejected any kind of paternalism, and this also relates to relationship and romance. You can find thousands of articles about the love of Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir, where they refused to be each other's belongings. Although let's note that they didn't identify as libertine or libertin, it's one of the most famous open relationships of French history. That's why you still see a huge queue of tourists waiting to be seated at Café de Flore in the 6th, so that they can have a cup of coffee where French existentialist philosophers used to hang out. We touched on the love and sex relationships and the stereotypes around them in our previous episode. The French existentialist movement has been popularized in so many forms of entertainment and in a way made itself to the pop culture, so it's really hard to leave this factor out. Yeah. So yeah, those are like the building blocks of how Paris became the city of love. But we said, Kelly, we're gonna talk about the French language and the accent. Yeah. So, is the French language sexy?
Yeah.
You weren't expecting me to ask you that? Kelly has a full face of surprise, like me and my direct questions.
So, direct answer, yes. So it's well known around the world that French is the language of love. Me personally, I do find the French language sexy. I like hearing it, I like speaking it. It's a soft and poetic sounding language. It's not as harsh on the ear as like some other Latin languages like Spanish or German. Mm-hmm. It's phonetically really pleasing, and it's soft intonations and a lilting cadence. It's very sing-songy. It's super lovely to listen to. It's really rich with vowels, and it's got a really fluid rhythm. And the way the words kind of roll off the tongue, it feels intimate, and it's whispered, and it's kind of breathless, you know? So French is full of terms of endearment, like mon amour, my love, mon chéri, my dear. And the French language has like countless ways to express love and affection. You know, obviously the phrase that we all know, je t'aime, which is I love you, which is really simple, but really profound. And it just embodies a kind of breadth of emotion. So historically, French was the language of European courts and diplomacy. It gave the language like an aura of sophistication and elegance as well. So this courtly love, which are... Courtly love. She married Kurt Cobain. That was a bad joke.
My girl, don't lie to me.
Courtly love. This originated in the medieval courts of Europe, right? And this saw knights expressing their love in poetic French, which actually just sort of cemented the association of the French language with romance. So that association is not just a product of modern imagination, actually. It's like goes right back into the culture and history and actual just the beauty of the language itself.
Yeah.
For me, it's the essence of romance. And the next time you hear someone speak French, just appreciate it. Appreciate like the symphony of sounds that you're hearing, because like everyone in the world loves the French language.
Good tip. I also think the French language is sexy. Like, let me say it up front. Especially some words, like my partner says, he's like having a full-on serious conversation with me. And I get into a completely different mood all of a sudden.
What mood, Delara?
I don't find the French accent sexy though. Like, I think some Anglo-Saxon people find the French speaking English sexy. I personally don't.
Okay, so yeah, the accent, we've got a source here from a specialist in French and sociolinguistics from the University of Leeds. His name's Nigel Armstrong, and he tells us that it's not the accent, actually, it's the association in our mind that makes association with romance, love and charm and elegance. It's not actually the sound itself.
Yeah.
So we've been shown so many tropes and stereotypes of a French accent that in our minds we've just decided that it's sexy.
Okay, yeah, that makes total sense.
I kind of tend to agree with you about French people speaking English might not be that sexy, but honestly for me it depends on the level of their English rather than the accent that they're using. For the most part, a French accent speaking English is sexy. Yes.
Okay,
so I know we got a bit personal in the first episode of this series, so we also want to do the same in this one maybe for a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
So we're talking about Paris and romance here, Delara. So can you give us your most romantic date or moment that you've had in Paris?
Okay, let me think. It can be a moment, right, too? You
sure.
Said that. Okay,
yeah.
So, because this is not a date, and I'm not sure if I told you this story. I was at your place when you invited me, my cousin and her husband, and Jeremy for dinner. You were doing your matchmaking magic there.
Yeah, I was.
And then we all left for home, and Jeremy and I were going to take the same metro line. So we went into the metro station, and he told me to go this particular direction of the metro line, and he went the other way. And as I was like going up the stairs, I realized like he got confused and went back down, and then went back up to chase him, and then we switched directions. Anyway, so we finally ended up on the right side of the platforms, and so there's the metro tracks between us, and we're standing in the opposite directions, and I think he was a bit embarrassed for confusing the directions. He had his headphones on and all, and I walked all the way to the end of the platform across him and asked him to take his headphones off. And we had a conversation for about like 5 minutes, shouting across the platforms. There was no one else in the metro station. And then my train started to arrive, and then he did this like reverence before it arrived to say goodbye to me. It was so cute. Soon after that, we started dating, and as you know, and some of the listeners as well, he's now my partner.
That is a cute story.
Mm-mm.
And I love that it takes place in a metro. And I know the metro station you're talking about as well.
Yeah.
It really lends itself well because it's not one of the, it's an aerial metro station.
Yeah, the Line 6 metro station. So you're actually above ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's set in the metro and you're having this lovely moment with Jeremy. And then, we know how that story progressed. It's really lovely.
Yeah, so that was the most romantic moment I had in Paris. How about you? Do you have one?
I think probably one of my most romantic moments was having a kiss on Place Vendôme under some Christmas lights.
Aww.
Yeah, but I have, you know, I've never gone walking on the Seine. I've never gone to the Eiffel Tower like hand in hand with anyone. All of that feels a bit too cliche to me, a bit too fake.
Okay.
Not sweet and like spontaneous like yours.
Yeah.
I love seeing other people in love in this city. I love watching people take selfies with their lovers outside the Eiffel Tower and stuff. I really do. But somehow, for the moment, it just doesn't really feel like it's for me.
Okay.
And I really would rather, not in a creepy way, but I'd rather observe people enjoying that part of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I'm part of that part of Paris.
Okay. Well, this makes me think, actually, maybe we should give some recommendations on good dating spots, no?
Okay, sure.
We talked about the magic of the city during our first three episodes, during the staying episode, and during these two now.
Yeah.
For me, it's very clear the love you can feel for the city comes from the ambiance, the history, the culture, the patrimony. You can love the city to its bits, being all by yourself, having a coffee in its cafes, reading a book in its parks, I don't know, admiring an artwork in its museums, drinking in bistros, whatever, having a picnic by the sand, like, should I continue? What I find strange though, for me, Paris is a solitary city, a city to be loved alone. So for me, in a way, love in Paris is love for Paris.
Yeah, okay.
All these places I mentioned, spending time by myself, are also good dating places though. Going to an exhibition has always been my favorite kind of first date. Picking a bottle of wine and sitting by the Seine or the canal is also great when it's warmer outside. For casual coffee or drink dates, I would pick literally any bistro around the 10th or the 11th.
Yeah.
I already mentioned Chez Jeannette before. Canal Saint-Martin is also really good. I also love a good wine bar, and the 11e Demain, for example, is amazing. It's in the 11th. So I obviously prefer hip and crowded places for dates. So if that's not your thing, then don't follow my recommendations. But yeah, do you have any kind of like favorite dating places?
Well, the thing for me is that I haven't spent an awful long time in this city single.
Yeah.
So I haven't really got any sort of dating recommendations by name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had pleasant dates in pleasant restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done pleasant things with pleasant people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty of Paris. You just mentioned like a whole list of activities to do, and you can pretty much do any of those.
Yeah.
If you find someone who you want to spend time with and do those things with, then go ahead and do it. And that's the beautiful thing about this city, is that it's such a beautiful place. Anywhere you go is going to be lovely and hopefully full of romance for you.
So that's it for today. I think this has been an interesting episode. I personally wasn't expecting to learn so much about the history around Paris being the city of romance.
Yeah.
After all that we discussed, Kelly, do you think Paris merits its reputation of being the city of love?
Yes, definitely.
I totally agree as well.
Yeah. So do we have a quote today then?
Yes, it's from a really cute movie called Paris Je T'aime. It's all these like little short stories about love and romance in Paris. And in this one, Carol, she says, she's a character in one of the short movies, "Sitting there alone in a foreign country, far from my job and everyone I know, a feeling came over me. It was like remembering something I'd never known before or had always been waiting for, but I didn't know that. I didn't know what. Maybe it was something I'd forgotten or something I've been missing all my life. All I can say is that I felt, at the same time, joy and sadness. But not too much sadness, because I felt alive. Yes, alive. That was the moment I fell in love with Paris. And I felt Paris fell in love with me."
Yeah, that's really nice. That's a lovely quote. And I kind of understand that feeling of joy and sadness at the same time.
Mm.
That's happened a lot to me in the last kind of few months living here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel you, Carol.
And as you can understand, before we were talking about the dating places, romantic places, I have a particular kind of love for Paris, so this code is obviously completely biased because it's about falling in love with Paris, but not falling in love with someone in Paris.
Absolutely. Beautiful. That's it for our Valentine's Day episode on the City of Love. I hope you found this not only interesting, but entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
We are still on Instagram. You can still follow us, you can still message us. You know the score now, guys.
And if you have any questions to ask us for our Ask Us Anything episode, which we're going to release really soon, please, if you're listening on Spotify, there's a link to there. You can email us, DM us.
Absolutely. And we will see you really soon for our next episode. Thanks, everyone. Ciao.
Au revoir et je vous aime. On vous aime.